ladies and gentlemen, the story you're about to see is true. The names have been changed to protect the innocent.
Good evening. This is Scared Monkeys Radio. Our webpage is located at www.scaredmonkeys.com/radio. That's www.scaredmonkeys.com/radio. If you're listening to us on satellite, virtual channel W3957 on Trust Cable in Alabama, channel 46 on the podcast at kickradio.com. Wherever you're picking us up, it's great to have you. Tonight on the Dana Pretzer Show, we have Jossie Mansour, the managing editor of Diario. We have Tim Miller from Texas Equisearch. We have two TV guys, Eric Spinato and Robert Crossman. They're both former TV senior producers and now have their own media consulting businesses. And we're going to talk about TV news and Katie Couric in particular. And Cairo, one of the Scared Monkeys who was at the New Orleans Travel Show. That's tonight on the Dana Pretzer Show here on Scared Monkeys Radio. Okay, we're back. This is Scared Monkeys Radio. My name's Dana Pretzer. If you've had a chance to look at some of the press coverage on the Holloway case lately, you'll have seen a story that has come from, and I hope I'm pronouncing this right, Amigo.com. And it's titled The Other Side of the Holloway Case. And I got to admit that when I read this, I bit my bottom lip so much that it just about fell off. This is absolutely unbelievable. Here's a little piece of it. The American Federal Bureau of Investigation, FBI, has systematically hindered the work of the police and the judiciary on Aruba in the investigation of the missing student Natalie Holloway, especially when it came to investigating her direct relatives, Mother Beth, stepfather George Jug Twitty, who apparently has direct or indirect contacts and influence reaching as far as the White House. Now, when I read that, I thought the only thing we can do is we can go right to Aruba, to the man I call the truth detector, someone who can answer this. And we'll go through this article piece by piece tonight. Jossie Mansour, the managing editor of the Diario. Hi, Jossie.
Hi.
You know, when I read this article, I just about threw up, to be quite honest with you. What are your thoughts? And then we'll get into the article itself.
Well, when I read the article also, I was very amazed at all this hogwash that was in there.
Yeah.
Because that's all there is to it. I mean, there's not one ounce of truth in any of what they say.
Now, this must be somewhat difficult for you as a journalist in Aruba to read something. I know your paper has covered this story from stem to stern. And then to read something like this, and for me now to ask you to comment on that must be somewhat difficult.
It is difficult because, you see, we are used to sticking to the facts. And the few facts that we have in this case are all contained in the admissions that these three suspects made to the police during interrogations. None of that comes forward in this article that was published in the Amigo. Not one bit of it. They went and interviewed people who have a different story, different opinions, which is okay. I mean, we have no problems with that.
Right.
But to put this in an article in the Amigo and state that the FBI torpedoed this case, come on. I mean, what does Amigo take us for?
Well, that's just it. And it, again, I found it very disappointing. The facts or the misinformation that was reported just had to make you sit back and scratch your head somewhat. But I thought what we'd do, Jossie, if it's okay with you, that we could go through the article itself and kind of do a point-counterpoint on what is going on here, if that's all right with you. Some of the comments about the FBI using their influence and hindering the investigation, we've talked about a little bit, can easily be countered. What can you say about that?
Well, I say that this is coming from Dompech, according to this article. This Dompech, again, gave that declaration on some kind of a videotaped interview. I don't know when that took place. But Dompech has said so many contradictory things that this is hard to believe. You see, we did go back and check with other authorities in the police department, and they called this hogwash. I mean, they said this is totally untrue. As did Karen Jansen before she left. She was happy with the assistance that they got from the FBI, even though the FBI was allowed only to look in through some glasses during the interrogations. But they were happy with the cooperation they received. And in an interview, a conversation I had with Dompler in my office, which is also videotaped, he told me that they were happy that the FBI was involved, and they had wished that it was more involved in it than it was. I mean, I don't understand these kind of statements that contradict each other as we go along.
Is this damage control? What rational reason would Amigo publish something like this?
I think that they feel very uncomfortable with the case so far. I think that they're coming up with some theories to take the attention away from the three suspects and all the facts of statements of facts that they did during police interrogations, and come up with this cock and bull story taken from the air, no? They talk about the air ambulances, they talk about the torpedoing of the FBI in the case, in other words, putting obstacles in the path, even threatening the local police. Come on. Never heard that before.
Let's talk about that air ambulance and this so-called secret exit that was being planned. Again, I'll quote from the article a little bit. They revealed that already one day after Holloway was declared missing, a medical plane or ambulance plane from the U.S. had arrived on Reina Beatrix Airport and was stationed for a few days in the area of the airport where private jets park. Nothing strange about that on the surface, except that the crew, two pilots, a doctor, and a nurse, knew nothing about why they were there. Let's talk about that a little bit, Jossie.
Sure. You know, it's practically impossible for any kind of plane to land in Aruba without the proper authorization. See, they say that it came without authorization and it took off without authorization. Come on. They have such a strict control at the airport in Aruba, that's impossible. That the crew that was present, I wish they would have named the doctor so we can contact them and ask them if they came here, what was so strange about their coming here. But there was an air ambulance that came to Aruba. We know that during the first few days. But just in case that the girl was found and she was badly beaten or mistreated or whatever, to give her immediate attention on board the plane while taking her to the States where they were more confident of the medical attention she would receive. That's the logical explanation for the presence of the plane. But these people want to make something very big out of this. They lie about it's landing without any kind of a permit, it's taking off again. I mean, all that has been proven to be wrong and just inventions.
One of the quotes of the article says, the ambulance plane needed to be used as a secret exit for Natalie to the U.S. Secret, for the authorities weren't allowed to get wind of this. If they succeeded in liberating the girl from a drug warehouse and secretly leave the island. You know, I get so angry when I read something like that. Your thoughts, sir?
No, I mean... I don't know where they get all this information from or why they're saying it at this stage of the case, two years and 2 months afterwards. I have absolutely no idea why they're doing this. That she was in some kind of a drug house or whatever, that's the first thing I hear about that is now. Never been brought up before. Not by the authorities, not by the prosecution, not by anyone. This is the first thing that we hear. This is the first time that we hear about this. And I don't know who brought it forward. I think it was either Julia or Angela or whomever. But that is not the case here. The case here is that this girl stepped into the car with three known suspects, and she disappeared while in the company of these three suspects, period. No one came after that to say that they saw her, that she left the island, that she was seen in Rio or Saigon or wherever. I mean, that's the fact that we have to stick to because it's the only known true fact of the case.
In a comment that I don't know if I should lower the National Enquirer to this caliber of Amigo, but in a quote or a comment that sounds like something right out of the National Enquirer, it says, Renfro now also tells her story about the side the world doesn't know, that Renfro and Angela talk about a phone call that they received from an unknown woman on the 2nd of June 2005, and that person knows where Natalie is at the moment, that she's still alive but doesn't want to go back to her mother. Let's mention that.
Well, this is again the first time I hear this story even being mentioned. I don't know what kind of a woman would have called. I'm sure that if there was such a call, I'm sure that that would have contacted the authorities to look into it and to go and search for the girl wherever she was. But this is nothing that has, this is something that has not been proven. We have absolutely no specific details about it, and much less any evidence that this call ever took place.
There's even comments here that there was a measly sum of $4,000, and the caller would say where Natalie was. When you do an investigation like this, and I know you know from the media side or from the journalist side, and I from the investigator side, that you'll have all sorts of crackpots and crazies coming forward that want money in order to give information. Was there ever any credible information that was offered that money, to your knowledge, was not provided for, Jossie?
No, none whatsoever. On the contrary. I mean, if this was the money that was asked of Beth or Jug or whomever to find the girl and liberate her from wherever she was held against her will, I mean, they would have been paid gladly. The main objective of Beth's visit here in Aruba was to get her daughter back to the States with her. I mean, she would have paid anything that she had or didn't have. She would have looked for it to get her daughter back. This is another thing that's so hard to believe in this article.
There are some a cast of characters that I'd like to go over with you here. One is Alberto G. Let's talk about him.
Alberto G. I don't know who they're referring to as Alberto G.
It says here, it says, once again, the unauthorized med plane departs to the U.S. after the crew members have been too clamorous and light about their unknown mission at the bar of the hotel where Natalie had stayed, and where now also her relatives and traveling companions sleep for free, the Holiday Inn. They were subsequently fired on their return. So the manager employee, Alberto G., another person which the TV producers portrayed incognito of the private airport, heard shortly afterwards from one of the crew members of the other medplane. Alberto is coincidentally, as he is one of the first who they come into contact with. Is there even such a person as Alberto G.?
I never heard of him. Personally, I never heard of him. I don't even know who they're referring to.
This sounds like something that was made up in a maybe as a dream. I'm not sure. Condoleezza Rice is mentioned in the article. It says the day after she disappeared, the chief protocol of Aruba got a telephone call from Condoleezza Rice asking him to ask our prime minister to put this case at the highest priority. And if that actually happened, good. But except for the hot breath of the FBI in their neck, the local authorities got frustrated in their work, especially when wanting to know more about the stepfather, Jug. Comment about that for me, please, Jossie.
You know, I don't know whether Condoleezza Rice, among all her occupations worldwide, had the time to call for this specific case. I know one thing that what surprised me personally during the first few months was that I didn't hear of any involvement of either the consul in Curacao, the embassy in Caracas, or the State Department in Washington. I never heard of their involvement in this. I never heard of any comments they made. I haven't heard of any contacts they may have made to have this case move forward. It may well have happened, but it hasn't been made public so far. On the Lisa Rice's phone call, well, I leave it up to the person who said that.
If you don't mind, Jossie, if we could take a few questions from my listeners.
Sure.
It says, ask Jossie about Lorenzo. We want to find out if Lorenzo is still detained and also if Jossie has heard anything else about him.
Well, Lorenzo is still detained. He was detained because he had over 100 plants of marijuana in his home. He used to cultivate them. He was under surveillance for a long time by the police, thinking or as a suspect of being involved in some kind of drug deals, selling marijuana or whatever. He is still in prison. What do I know about him? It's been said in Aruba and confirmed by many people that he's a half-brother of Yoran. He even looks like him, has the same height, practically the same facial context. But that's about all we know about him. He lives like a recluse in a very remote place on the island. We don't know much about him.
One of my listeners emailed me, Jossie, to mention to you, and maybe you know this, that the Aruba police website, Aruban police website, has the Amigo story posted on it. I don't know if you knew that or not.
No, I didn't know that. I don't know why they would post it.
I don't know.
Maybe they form a part of all this confabulation to make us believe something that has absolutely no ounce of truth in it.
One has to wonder why now. You know, this craziness that they've decided to post. Why not a month ago? Why not 2 months ago? Is there something in the wind that may be coming down and they're trying to counteract it?
Perhaps the presence of the Dutch investigative team. Maybe they're doing such a good job that these people don't want this case really closed the way it should be closed. In other words, that whoever is a suspect or whomever is suspected of having done a misdeed with this girl or in whose company she disappeared has to be protected in one way or the other. I don't know why. I mean, we've asked ourselves many questions in this case. Why all this subterfuge? Why questions that should have been asked weren't asked? I mean, many other things that form this mystery of her disappearance.
Yeah, mystery for sure. I have some more questions for you, Jossie, if that's all right.
Sure.
It says, did you or anyone from your newspaper ever interview the person who poured the new concrete, around the pool at the Vandersloot home? Art Wood mentioned speaking with this person and some irregularities between the excavation and the actual pouring of the concrete. Has there been any follow-up along those lines?
I don't know whether the Dutch team has a follow-up or will follow up on it. I know that when they searched the polis on the slaughterhouse, they did not touch the concrete that was poured around the pool. No.
Do you know of any connection between Lorenzo and the disappearance of Natalie Holloway?
Personally, no. I've heard his name mentioned. I've heard him being related to Johan van der Sloot, partying with him, being seen with him in some places, but that's about all we know about his contacts with Johan and the Kalpoe brothers.
Another question, Jossie. Are there any Dutch investigators still in Aruba? If so, any knowledge as to what they may be doing?
Yes, they are still here. They haven't left the island yet. They plan to leave and then come back after 2 weeks. That's what we've been told officially by the Minister of Justice. But they're still here. They're still studying whatever they found, tracing whatever small items they took from Paulus's property. I don't see them doing anything else. They haven't searched anywhere else except Paul van der Sloot's house and the Kalpoe brothers' residence.
This story, this Amigo story, is a head-scratcher, for lack of a better term, and I'm sure you've seen and heard lots in all your years of experience, but have you ever come across something as out there as this, and does it make you wonder and question the credibility of some of your contacts in the media?
Yes, it does. It's bizarre. This whole article is bizarre. I don't blame the Amigo per se, because the Amigo just published it the interviews that took place between these people that came from Holland, some camera crew that came from Holland, Van Heen or whatever his name is.
Right.
And that made these interviews on the island. What they did was give a summing up of what was being interviewed, what was being said, and that passed in Holland in some kind of television station.
One of the last questions I have here for you, Jossie. There's a lot of theory that is out there, but there's also a lot of fact. Your paper has reported the facts. Here we see a lot of theory that has gone on. The people of Aruba, the good people of Aruba, will read this and make up their own minds. I want to ask you, as a journalist and as a resident, what are the people saying about this article in Amigo?
You know, very few people have paid any attention to it at all. I don't hear any comments on it here or there, none whatsoever. What we did hear today was a radio program they had on at Canal 90, Channel 90, in which some other hidden, mysterious figure that changes his voice all the time answers a series of questions and says that that Natalie did not leave with the ambulance plane in Aruba, that there is no known fact that she has left the island, etc.
Mm-hmm.
But as far as this article on its own, no, I haven't heard any comments with regards to it.
Do you think that some of these people that are part of this article have stars in their eyes and are looking for their own 15 minutes of fame?
Probably. I can't find any other reason to justify this kind of inventions that they came up with after two years and 2 months after the case, after the girl disappeared. I find no other reason to justify it.
So as far as the timeline goes, it will be a few weeks yet before we hear anything as far as the searches and the cold case investigation.
Yes, because I understand Tim Miller is on his way to Aruba. We want to welcome him as of now. He did a good job when he was here last. And now he's going to do as good a job on the ocean as he did on land, because we have the opinion that she has to be searched for in the ocean more than on land.
Well, I tell you, this is one story that, and I'm sure in your experience, has had more changes and twists and than any other story, but we all hope that the family gets some answers soon. Thank you, Jossie.
You're welcome.
Take care. That's Jossie Mansour from Diario. We'll be right back. Okay, we're back. This is the Dana Pretzer Show here on Scared Monkeys Radio. It's always a pleasure to have Tim Miller on from Texas EquiSearch. Hi, Tim.
Hey, Damon. How are you?
I'm doing fine. It sounds like you're out working right now.
Well, we are working. I mean, we're in Fort Lauderdale, Florida, on a Steffa Henry case. And, you know, we can't close a lot on this case, except I think we're making progress on this one. And we got another case down here for Heather Egidio that a homicide called us on. And I mean, it never ends, Dana.
It's
never ends.
It's nonstop. That's something else for sure. How's the cooperation going down there, Tim?
We're doing well. I mean, it's one of these things we don't want a lot of media attention on, you know, for reasons that we can't disclose. But I think we're going to find this girl. I think we're going to find her, and I don't want to be the bearer of bad news.
Right.
But she's not going to be Elizabeth Smart case. It's not one of them that's going to come home alive.
Well, and I do understand that. Sometimes the media, Tim, can be a bit of a hindrance to you. We've seen that with the media not understanding a lot what's going on. Talk about the parallels between the media that helps and the media that hinders.
You know what? There's time we need media and there's time we don't. And this time we don't need a lot of that media. I mean, there's time that the media can maybe run a person's interest way, and we've been hammered by media down here, in local and national media, and we are not willing to do a story. We're down here for one reason, that's to find this girl and bring her home to her parents, and hopefully law enforcement can make an arrest. You know, there are times that I think that not time, pain of my God, I'd be lying if I said that. Every time the media grabs a story, you know, they want to sensationalize something for ratings.
Yep.
We're not in South Florida right now for ratings. We're down here to find a girl.
Absolutely.
And, you know, we're going back to Aruba.
Yep.
And, in fact, we didn't get there at the end of June, but this is sort of right around the corner. We're not going there for media. We're going there to find Natalie Holloway.
Yep.
Every case we do is about finding that missing person. We've got volunteers to... Sports play that has joined us and members that have joined us because of listeners out there. We've got airboats, we've got dogs, we've got people down here that are helping us because they've got a heart and they want to come down and help. And, you know, it's just amazing. When we've got a missing person, it brings the best out of people. But many, many times the media ruins that because people want to come down and be media stars and be on TV. You know, it's not always the case.
Well, we certainly don't want to take away from the focus, which is finding the missing loved one and helping the family. Tim, I'm going to ask you just one more question before I let you go. Is there a timeline on your return to Aruba, or are you still working on that?
You know, our timeline to Aruba is... We've actually gotten the engineer and underwater surveyor together with the guy that's going to be running the sonar equipment. We've gotten them together. And you know what? I'm the one that dropped the ball on. We should have been to Aruba at the end of June, and we got caught up in all the Kelsey Smith cases, the Davis case, all the other things
right.
That were pressing. And when I called Lewis Schaefer yesterday, I said, Lewis, what's going on with Aruba? He said, well, I thought the guy that was running the sonar was supposed to call my engineer and underwater surveyor. I was like, you know what, I dropped the ball, but they are together now. This is something that is definitely going to happen within a few weeks, not months, a few weeks, and we're going back there. And in fact, the guy that owns this company, Lewis Schaefer, offshore, Superior Offshore International, he was disappointed. He wants to be there. He's got the equipment. We need to go finally bring her back to Alabama. Everybody go to her funeral, and then roll her shirt sleeves up, because you know what? We're going to have another case after that. I mean, it's another one of our missing cases we got to bring home. And Tim Miller is a very, very small molecule in a big world. Without all the listeners and the people who supported Echo Search, we won't be anywhere. So, keep listening and stay on the old website and stuff and help us and bring these systems.
Absolutely. Godspeed, my friend. We'll talk soon.
I appreciate it, man.
Okay, bye-bye. That's Tim Miller from Texas Echo Search. Hi, we're back. This is Dana Pretzer Show here on Scared Monkeys Radio. If you look up in the American Heritage Dictionary, the word sputum, yeah, I'm not making that up. It says it's matter coughed up and usually ejected from the mouth, ew, including saliva, foreign material, and substances such as mucus or phlegm from the respiratory tract. You're saying, what, has Pretzer lost his mind that he's talking about this tonight? No, I haven't. Katie Couric is big time in the news right now. I wish, and she probably wishes, because I don't actually mind her news broadcast, that her ratings were a bit better. But because of that word, there was a big problem that came up. Has it been hyped? Has it been overblown? Well, we're going to go to our two guys that are all media. Eric Spinato is a former television senior producer who now has his own media consulting business, Spinato and Associates. And I'm also very happy to have Bobby Grossman from Media One Management on the line with me. Gentlemen, how are you?
How are you, Dana?
I'm doing good. I'm doing good. Bobby, welcome to the show. First time having you on here. When I started to do this blathering about sputum, what's going on? Katie Couric, she's a sweetheart. I love watching her newscasts, but she's tanking out every week. What's happening here?
Well, you're probably not the only one that thinks highly of her. I'm sure there are plenty of folks out there who think highly of her. I think she walked into a company that had their way of doing business. She comes from a morning show on NBC, more flexible format, and she moved into a very rigid evening newscast that, although they tried to change a few things here and there, could never really figure out what was going to work for Katie. And I think what you're seeing right now is you're seeing something that we all are used to, which is the blame game. There's a lot of blame to go around, and everyone's trying to find out who to point fingers at. CBS was pointing some fingers at her. She now has folks that work with or have worked with her in the past pointing fingers now at CBS. And you're going to see a lot of that going around, because no one wants – this is a colossal error, if you will. We're talking about millions of dollars that were invested. $3 million on just for her new set. Plenty of money that went into the hiring of top-notch producers in the business to run what they thought was going to be the holy grail of broadcast. I mean, if you look back prior to her coming over to CBS, all of that media hype about even talking to Katie Couric, could she really do this? How much would she be worth? And the number was in the tens of millions. So this being what we can now consider a colossal failure, you're now seeing the colossal image demise and image going with that. And Katie probably wants to save face here. CBS wants to save face. People don't want to lose their jobs over it. They've already lost Rome Hartman. And now people are going to keep pointing fingers until this all somehow washes out and the smoke clears.
Eric, what happened with this slap? You know, I've gone on a little bit about it. There's obviously a story behind it. What went on?
I mean, apparently this writer, chose to use a word that was not in her everyday dictionary, and of course took offense to it. And as a host of a show, or anyone as part of a show as a whole, has a right to voice their opinion, to say, I think this is inappropriate to use on the broadcast. So she allegedly, slapped the writer on the wrist, and honestly, I think there was nothing more to it. I mean, she just voiced her opinion. She admitted that she definitely did not want, she was unhappy, but she seems to have a strong relationship with this writer. And I think it just also shows that she, A, editorially wants to be, very involved in her own broadcast, and B, it's her name. No matter what writing, what visual goes on this newscast, it's still Katie Couric's show, and therefore, Bobby says, everyone is watching her, everything that she does, and it's going to be scrutinized, and therefore she's at the point now where she has to put her foot down, make demands, and of course, in the end, protect her own reputation.
Bobby, when you think of CBS News, of course you think of Walter Cronkite, Dan Rather, whoever else. Some would say the old dinosaurs of news. You guys both come from working in cable news. What happened? What went wrong? Or what should have CBS done when they brought Katie, a fresh face, over to CBS?
Well, I think part of it is that they wanted to bring in a younger mold of those guys, and clearly that's not what works in the evening news department. If there are some things that have remained constant, it's that very respected half hour of news, and people didn't necessarily want to hear it from younger folks. There was this in the business, they are very concerned with how many folks are going to be watching, how many viewers between 18 to 30 or 8 or 25 to 54. The thinking is that the younger the viewer, the more money, the more value that's going to bring in for advertisers, and the more money the network will make in their ad sales. But in that particular hour or half hour, it just seems like the old guard still has control of the news as far as viewers are concerned and what they want to watch. And so you saw that Elizabeth Vargas, and his name escapes me, the gentleman who went out to Iraq and was injured,
right.
Bob Woodruff is his name, Bob Woodruff. He and Vargas were doing the ABC version. That didn't really work out. And finally they bring in Charlie Gibson. And Charlie Gibson now is doing it, and look at his ratings. He's surpassed Brian Williams. Charlie Gibson is a vestige of the old guard. You know what I mean? And that just goes to show, and Brian Williams maybe less so. And look what's happening. Charlie Gibson is doing something that ABC hasn't been able to do for years, which is surpass NBC in the nightly news race. And that's, you got to look at that. There is a value. There's a value, maybe this is one of the few places where you see it, but there is a value in having those older, tested gentlemen, and at 6:30, and the country hasn't moved away from that entirely, and that's why we're seeing success for ABC at that hour, Brian Williams moving back, and then Katie Couric, a total flop for CBS.
CBS, Eric, has brought in Rick Kaplan to be the executive producer. I'm sure you know Rick. What's going to happen?
I think Rick is going to continue to pursue to broadcast the best evening newscast there is. He's a great storyteller. He does come from the old school. He's from the ABC. He's former president of CNN. And Rick is a very likable guy. And I think the only thing he can do is find what the viewers really want, besides news. And I think one of the areas that I think she's very strong in, and she can achieve strong ratings, possibly success, is her newsmaking interview skills. I mean, let's face it, when she had Michael J. Fox, who was talking about the Parkinson's disease, bringing it into the presidential race, I believe, and then also Senator John Edwards and his wife, who came down with cancer, she has a name, and these are people that do want to speak with her because, A, they either spoken with her before, she's a great interviewer, she does make you feel comfortable, but she could also be a tough journalist. And I think that she can achieve more success on these newsmaker bookings. I think one thing before Rick Kaplan came aboard, where they started to tinker with an act, like Bobby says, an evening news kid. These are people who want their straightforward news, in-depth, great storytelling when the story arises. But when they started doing like the free speech, I don't think people really cared about it. You know, if they're able to lock in, you know, 2 to 3 newsmaker interviews per week, she will get PR. She will get ink in the press, like those two examples of Michael J. Fox and Senator Edwards. And I think once you start tinkering with everything else from top to bottom, because remember, this is a half-hour broadcast, but if I'm correct, she's only on air for 20 minutes.
Right.
So if you can find a good 3 minutes to put a good newsmaker, whatever it is, the news of the day, who's the get of that topic today? Maybe Iraq, maybe Iran, or just local a local story. I think that's where you have to pursue. And if I'm correct, I think her producer that she probably brought over from NBC kind of spoke out today with Katie Couric's permission in this article that's printed here in the States, saying there was a lot of promises that was given to Katie, having a say on the news editorial judgment, and it seemed that this never came to light.
Bobby, let's parallel this now to cable news. Fox, CNN, MSNBC. The ratings for these, Fox in particular, seem to be steady, seem to be good. Not totally wiping out the broadcast news, the CBS News, NBC, etc. But let's parallel to what the people want as far as news coverage. Compare Bill O'Reilly to Charlie Gibson.
Well, Bill O'Reilly is right where he needs to be, which is being cable news. He can basically say what he wants to say and not worry about what they're going to say about him in the morning paper. And if they do cover it and they do attack him, that's okay, because he's part of an opinion block in the cable news world, the primetime opinion block, or at least this is the block that cable news has proven, or Fox has proven, is well within its right to do. Now, prior to O'Reilly and all this opinion stuff, these were straight broadcasts and basically revolving around the personality of a host. But as far as their personality, they didn't have much room for personality other than maybe a little bit of a sense of humor. One was fresher than the other. Male, female, genders, played out differently. But there wasn't much room for them to have an opinion. Matter of fact, in the old days, having an opinion was something you weren't allowed to do. So cable has changed that. I'm not sure that is going to change on the network broadcast. I don't think it'll change at 6:30, and you're probably not going to see much in the way of opinions from any of the anchors in that nightly news chair. But in cable, it's perfectly appropriate. The marketplace has welcomed it. And Fox was the first to really do it, and it's working out really well. As a matter of fact, part of why they're leading in primetime the way they are is because you don't see much in the way of opinion elsewhere. You're not going to see much of opinion from Paula Zahn. She's a journalist in the straight sense of the word. But when you do see, occasionally you will see folks at the other networks come forward and start taking a stance and a point of view in primetime. And we do see that their ratings do tend to increase the more opinionated they are. For example, if you look at Lou Dobbs was not a big ratings magnet as far as CNN programs went, but became one when he started taking a regular stance against illegal immigration.
Right.
Similarly, Countdown with Keith Olbermann took over 3 years to become a player in the ratings game, often now doing better than CNN at that time slot. Still far less than O'Reilly, but made a notable jump. And a lot of that had to do with the fact that Olbermann himself started to become opinionated. And those thoughts, the final thoughts that he had on his show, where he would literally sometimes take, 10 minutes to, read an opinion. Some of it had to do with the aftermath of 9/11. Some of it had to do with, little things like the worst person in the world. I mean, I think he used O'Reilly very successfully and effectively pretty regularly. And the more we saw that from Keith, the more people started to flock to him. And I think he doubled and sometimes now is tripling his numbers of old, his old averages, simply because they know that they may get more opinionated, a more opinionated broadcast with a livelier host. And so I think those two guys are very good examples of what you can do for your ratings when you start to have an opinion rather than just do a traditional broadcast.
Yeah, just reading the script, and I highly doubt that we'll see a body language segment on the CBS Evening News. Eric, Katie Kirk says, and I quote from this article, people are very unforgiving and very resistant to change. Now, that may be true somewhat, and I'm sure she's under unbelievable pressure, but can she make it work the way that she wants to make it work?
I think it's, honestly, I think it's too late in the game to turn it around. I think one of the most interesting comments that she made, and from correct Jeff Fager, the EP of 60 Minutes, is you will see her be lateral moved over to 60 Minutes.
Right.
And the torch will be handed over to someone else to sit in her chair. I just don't know how you can make all of a sudden a huge turnaround. Because if I'm correct, the ratings were worse now than to the prior Mr. Schefter, I believe. So, who was hosting the show, CBS News. So I don't see how you can turn that show, a 360, and jumping points in the ratings to make a difference. I think you'll definitely see her end up at 60 Minutes, where I think her skills will be best utilized.
Bobby, just before we let you guys go, the blogosphere, internet, satellite radio, you name it, technology and the broadcast medium has done a 360-degree turn many times now. And again, we get back to the traditional aspect of the evening news. How much has that affected the way the evening news is broadcast, or is it like we've talked about already, just the traditional, you turn on the news at 5 or 5:30 to watch the news? We're not really interested in a blog or something else like that.
I think the evening news crowd is, first of all, they're down, their numbers are down. The evening news crowd is still maybe not entirely integrated with the new media. And that's a good thing for the older guard that we talked about that's still sitting in the chair. We may have lost Rather and Brokaw, but you do have Gibson, and you do have Williams, and you do have who's been, I guess, well-trained, well-seasoned in coming up through Brokaw and having been under that sort of tutelage for a long time. So he's, you can consider him, although he's a newer guard, he's still traditional. And Schefter, if he were ever to come back at CBS. So their audience, I think, is still okay to turn on the TV set at 6:30 and watch the evening news, and they're still going to get millions of viewers, although less than they've ever gotten before, but still going to be around for a little while longer. But I think you got to go back to something that Bill Gates said not too long ago, which is that 5 years from now, the way we watch television is going to completely change. We don't even know exactly how that's going to happen, but we know it will happen. Why? Because Bill Gates said so, and he's usually right about these things. So the folks who are watching now are going to have to change, are going to have to become accustomed to a new way of watching television. And so we are going to see this stuff slowly erode further, and then I think it's going to come to a point where it's going to happen at a much quicker pace. They're safe for now, for the most part. It will change, and it's going to be interesting to see how that plays out. I think it's going to be very interesting.
Eric, I'm going to give you the last word, and I'm going to make you the executive producer of the CBS Evening News, and I'm going to ask you, what is the one thing that you're going to change?
I think the pace, and I think, a little more excitement. I mean, you still want to lower the demos. Like Bobby said, there is an old guard that, everyone, every person has their own choice of what network they want to tune in to get their news a day. And I just think Katie has to keep doing good journalism. And when she has those opportunities to interview those newsmakers a day, I think those need to be pursued, because therefore she will get ink in the paper and it will show her skills of why she was brought over there.
Yep.
Meaning she gets to, you know, interview newsmakers. People are going to tune in of the three networks to Katie when she gets to get. I think that has to be focused on. Otherwise, I don't know where this goes from here.
Eric Spinato, Bobby Grossman, thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you.
We'll be right back. Okay, we're back. My name's Dana Pretzer, and of course, this is the Dana Pretzer Show. An information campaign is a little softer than using the term boycott or, you know, words like that. And on the 29th and 30th of June and 1st of July, some good folks went to the New Orleans Travel Show to have an information campaign. You know, it's really hard not to say the other words about Natalie Holloway, how she's been missing for 2 years, how the island of Aruba is not safe. And they didn't chain themselves to trees or anything or lay out in the middle of the freeway. They had an information campaign to pass on information to those at the New Orleans Travel Show about Aruba. It seems strange to me that the New Orleans Travel Show wasn't about promoting travel to New Orleans, who needs the travel a lot more than Aruba. Cairo from Scared Monkeys was there, and she's on the line with me now. Hi.
Hi, Dana.
How you doing?
Just great, thank you.
Tell us about the trip to New Orleans and the New Orleans Travel Show.
Sure. Well, we felt like it was a wonderful opportunity to speak to a lot of people. We saw tourists. We saw people that were attending the travel show. We saw just a lot of New Orleans folks that would come and talk to us because they saw the banners and the signs. Grass and Jamie from Blogs for Natalie were there, and they had come in from out of town. I actually live in the New Orleans area.
Mm-hmm. Now, again, New Orleans, Hurricane Katrina, I've done shows about that here. I have some friends that live in New Orleans. You poor people have had the crap kicked out of you in the last little while.
Yeah.
It must seem strange to have a travel show where travel to other places, especially Aruba, is happening. How did that make you feel as someone from New Orleans?
Well, I think it was a good general show. I believe the focus really was on Jackson Square and how it could improve any kind of benefits to get people there. But there were many people from all over the country that... and from other countries like Aruba, they're promoting their travel too. So I think it was a good all-around event from what I gathered.
Well, that's great. We've covered this topic on my program before. What kind of flack did you run into, or did you?
Well, we had problems. Well, mostly with the security people around the Hilton and the Riverwalk, which was behind the Hilton, and the World Trade Center. We had permission to use the private property to put our signs and our banners, but sometimes it really wasn't clear to us where the private property began. And
right.
So we had some very wonderful signs and banners, very professional looking, and brochures that were developed by the people that have worked in the two previous shows that Monkeys and Blogs for Natalie people have been to.
What kind of reaction did you get from the Aruban contingent?
Well, I'm not really sure about that because they were staying in their meetings and stuff. We went into the Hilton some, especially Grass, and even put some brochures in there. We know they got the word for sure that we were there, but we didn't have any direct dealings as far as I know. There were some people that were taking pictures of the banners. We don't know, you know, who they were. Some of those people would absolutely speak to us, and others, you know, kind of avoided us when we went up to them.
What was your goal for being there?
We just wanted to make everybody that we could possibly make aware that Natalie was still missing, and that we wanted Aruba to have some justice for her. And we wanted Natalie to be found. Many, many people would come up to us and say, oh, it's so sad, she's still missing. There were a lot of people very familiar with the case. There were even people from Birmingham and Mountain Brook that came up to us and ask us why we were there, and we explained about it being a travel show. But,
well, keeping the story alive is the main thing, and
exactly.
I don't think any of us are in this to hurt any good, decent people. We're in this to get answers for the family.
Absolutely, and we tried to make that point also.
And to get justice for Natalie.
Exactly.
That's the most important thing. Were you able to get any TV coverage while you were there?
No, we saw some TV bands and stuff, but I guess they were more inside the Hilton, and nobody came up to us that was in the media. So, but we still feel like we reached a lot of really interested people and interesting people who were quite concerned about Natalie and her family.
And your message to them was?
That we wanted them to be aware that Natalie was still missing. It had been more than 2 years now, but that we would not stop asking Aruba to let us know what they're doing on their investigation, and also to help us to find her, to find answers.
Well, I think you guys did great work, and everyone involved at Scared Monkeys Blogs for Natalie or whoever deserve a great deal of credit, because it's our, you know, it's our responsibility as good, decent people to keep a story like this alive, because we know that those people out there that we're trying to help would help us. So it's the old what goes around comes around. We have to do what we can to help them. Cairo, thanks for coming on the show.
Thank you, Dana.
Take care. Okay, we've got about 6 minutes left in the program this evening. I want to thank all my guests for joining us and remind you that our webpage is www.scaredmonkeys.com/radio. That's www.scaredmonkeys.com/radio. And a podcast of this particular program will be available a little later on this evening. This program, other programs, and my daily commentary are available there. If you're listening on Trust Cable Channel 46 in Alabama, satellite W3957, that's a virtual channel, or wherever you're picking us up, kickradio.com. It's always nice to have you. I've got about 5 minutes left now. I'll take some of your calls at 1-306-842-7884. 1-306-842-7884. You can call in and talk about anything you like. I just got back from, I was down around the Mount Rushmore area visiting my daughter. And I tell you, yesterday and the day before that, I think the high was 103 degrees, and it's hard on an old guy like me. Hi, you're on the air.
Dana, hi, it's Red. How are you?
I'm fine. You know, I was away for a few days. I was down around Mount Rushmore visiting my daughter, and I think the daytime high there was 111 degrees. I won't talk about the puddles I left on the ground there, but that is Al Gore right? Is this global warming? Because I damn near died. But now today it's 52 degrees and it's pouring rain, so I don't know, maybe he's only half right.
Well, you got to understand, though, Dana, that part of the excuses of the low number turnout for some of the locations of his global warming concert was because the weather was cold.
I know. I was leading into that, and I was hoping that you...
Oh, man. It's kind of like when he had his speech in New York City a couple of years back, and it was it actually was on the coldest day of the year.
Yep.
That it set a record in New York City.
Yes, something like that. I think I did a commentary on that.
Poor,
one.
Poor Al.
Oh, I know. It's something else. This Amigo story, you know, we could have done a whole hour on that tonight, but Jossie's time was somewhat limited. It's beyond bizarre. Is this this group of loons just looking for 15 minutes of fame? Or, you know, you were there, you were front row and center with all of this going on. Why now and why this craziness?
Well, and that's ultimately the real story there, is that anyone that's coming up with these comments now was there in the beginning. So, and with all of the media, the entire world was in Aruba at one given time.
Right.
And you would have thought that if there was anything like this, it would have come out then. I mean,
yeah.
There isn't anything that was not researched. The media was an absolute nuisance when I was actually there, because they were truly getting in the way of searches. and to have, we actually had to run cover and take them out in many cases in order to, we'd send some people one direction and we'd have to go another direction in order to search. So, I mean, for anything to have happened, have been said, have been, it would have come out back then. I mean, it's pretty convenient to do it now. And I truly have to believe this is coming off of one thing and one thing only. Beth Holloway's book is right around the corner.
Yeah.
And from all that I've been told and I've heard, it's a doozy.
There you go. There you go. That's probably exactly it. It's damage control or their version of, and it's not going to work very well for them.
Well, I mean, Dana, it's really unfortunate that, you know, the quote-unquote, there's some media types, and I use that very loosely, that are involved in that Amigo article that, you know, you got to wonder. You know, you really have to wonder whether they're getting their keys maybe from the Nightly News and Katie Couric, because they're failing just as badly in putting out their message as, you know, Katie and CBS are doing in these, in the States.
You know, I hope I didn't gross anybody out by saying sputum on the air tonight, but...
Yeah, you had me at phlegm.
I couldn't spit anything else out. Oh, there you go. Ba-dum-boom.
Boy, I was like kind of staring at my speaker going, where's he going with that?
You know, oh, I'll tell you. You know, media is wonderful. You do your job, I do my job, and we do this on the side, but we work really hard at it, and these guys are getting millions of dollars to argue about the word sputum.
Well, I mean, Eric brought up some interesting points, but one of the things that I think is really lost in all of this, and we see the numbers all the time of print media going down, magazine, newspaper going down,
yep.
Television going down, and, you know, granted, the Nightly News, Eric is correct that it is that last bastion of the old guard type, Walter Cronkite type kind of setup. But that being said, back in the day, Republicans and Democrats watched Walter Cronkite.
Right.
We really didn't, you know, even though there was a slant, we look back on it a little bit now and we're like, yeah, he was biased. But, you know, it wasn't as overt as it is today. There are so many people that will not watch CBS News because they can't stand the politics of it. Because there is, you know, Dan Rather left their, you know, CBS in tatters with what, you know, he did with his whole Rathergate situation. And with Katie Couric going in there, they thought that they were going to put in this kind of cutesy little kind of puffed up new news type thing, but the reality is the demographic that they're looking for is on the internet.
Yeah, exactly.
They're not watching the Nightly News.
Yep.
So, I mean, if I remember right, I think, and I can't remember his name off the top of my head, the person who replaced Dan Rather, was it Schieffer?
Bob Schieffer, yep.
He had better ratings than Katie Couric has presently.
Yep.
And because he fell into the old guard, you know, kind of media type that everyone is accustomed to. But when they look for this demographic, that beholden demographic that has the money, those people cannot be bothered anymore to sitting down and watching television. They are getting their news off the net. And they want to read what they want to read, and they want to go elsewhere because they can't be bothered just to sit down. Half the time, they don't want to, you know, if they watch the news, they'll TiVo it, and they'll rip right through the commercials. I mean, they can't, no one can be bothered anymore to waste their time with some of this stuff.
Right you are, sir. I'm going to call it a night. Thank you for calling.
Thank you so much, Dana, and it's great to have you back.
Take care, my friend.
Bye.
Bye-bye. And that's the Top Banana Red from Scared Monkeys. Again, our webpage is www.scaredmonkeys.com/radio or scaredmonkeys.com. Thanks for joining us. And if you're looking for the podcast, it'll be available a little bit later on tonight. Thank you. Good night.